It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
It's like two oxen in the same yoke. You can't separate us.
And you're beating me
right
today.
Oh,
yeah. Pretty good, huh? Good morning, everyone.
Well, that's good.
Good morning, Ezzy. Good morning, return of the prodigal son. Good morning, Wynn. We haven't heard your voice for 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Well, he snowed in.
Snowed in. Yep. Busily trying to get everybody snowed out, so.
But you don't have snow at the present moment, correct?
Well, it's not snowing currently. We have plenty of snow if you want us to send you some.
Well, I hear
it's going to be snowing in the afternoon up there, though. That's all. That's what I saw in my weather report. Probably a couple of flurries.
You should get on the side of your truck, you should have, like, it painted Bring It On or something like that because, you know. you've had nothing but snow all winter.
Mother Nature might bring it on. That's a bit of a problem. I wouldn't be messing around with that.
Yeah, she might accept a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, not a good idea.
If we were up there, the truck that we're going to talk about today would have been pretty perfect. Johnny, you want to tell everybody what we're going to talk about?
No, it would have been useless.
What?
Yeah, it would have been useless. Two-wheel drive.
Why?
Four by two.
Yeah, two-wheel drive.
Two-wheel drive, yeah.
Well, we thought it was fabulous. Yeah. John?
Oh, well, I'm
thought
sure
it was
is.
Big. Well, this is, and when we were sort of talking about this before the show came on, it says it is a limited series, F-150
mm-hmm.
limited series. But the base price on this vehicle, and I'm glad I'm sitting down, is $67,135.
Well, the limited is one of the top packages that you can get. You can get the platinum over there,
yeah.
I believe. So.
Well, I'm looking at the 2019 F-150 spec models and specs, and it says XL, XLT,
mm-hmm.
Lariat, King Ranch,
uh-huh.
Platinum.
Right.
Ah, here's the limited. Let me pull that up.
Oh, the limited is the creme de la creme.
Okay. Well, that explains, base price $67,135. Yeah, and this one only had the towing package added, which was like $2,100,
mm-hmm.
so the total was like $70,000. But, mm-hmm. It was pretty top of the line. It had those wonderful running boards that when you open the door, they pop out, and then when you close
mm-hmm.
the door, they go back under. Kind of a thing.
Yep.
It helps pack the
snow down when you get in.
Yeah, we went through some mud, and I noticed when I opened it, there was sand and mud all over them, too.
I just have to say one thing before I forget.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. The running board was terrific. It came out, and you could step on it. It was just the right height, and you could, get into the truck. We also had the Jeep... The new Jeep, which was the version, honey? It is the four door Wrangler. What is that? See, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Unlimited.
No.
Unlimited.
Anyway, it was the four door Jeep.
Rubicon.
This running board seemed to be much higher than I've ever experienced in any Jeep whatsoever. It was literally 2 inches below the bottom of the floor of the car. It was almost a senseless appendage. We'll talk about that later
because I have some eye opening. It's a function thing, Mom. It's not actually you can use it as a step side, but it's also to prevent anything that's really dense from crushing the body of the car when you come up against it. So
good thinking.
Then we'll talk mm-hmm. about that in that context later. Okay, go ahead, Johnny.
I've lost my train of thought. Actually, there was a couple of things about this truck, other than it's a huge truck, and
mm-hmm.
that I really thought was that were kind of new features that I really liked. And one was that on the dashboard in front of you, as the truck starts out, it has 10 speeds, 10 forward speeds.
Right.
And there's a little panel to the right of the speedometer, and it shows it going through each of those
gears.
Each of those gears. And I'd never seen that before. And I actually thought that was pretty cool, that you sort of knew the progression.
That's a nifty
thing. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I mean, having 10 speed transmission is pretty cool, considering, you know, it used to be, with a 3-speed automatic transmission, you know,
yeah.
It's great. But, I mean, remember, you know, the Super Crew, it's really great, but base brass tacks, it's a Ford F-150.
Yeah.
Two-wheel drive is great if you're in the southern states or you don't need, I mean, even the, I'm not 100% certain on this, but even the state crew up here, they have some one tons that, you know, Ford F-350s that have a crew cab and an 8-foot bed and a sander in the back. And I believe that they're all two-wheel drive. Of course, you load up 6,000 pounds of material in the bed, you got all the traction you need on the rear tires.
Right.
But, you know, it's a Ford. It's a Ford, and that's pretty much all you have to say.
Meaning?
That they're excellent.
Yeah.
It
really is a quality built. Trucks, you know, I thought it, I guess I talk about this every time we talk about trucks, but, you know, I bought a Ford F-150 in like 19, I'm guessing now, but it was, say, 74. And I paid $6,000 for it, and it had you were talking about the 3-speed. It was a 3-speed on the column, you know. and a reverse. The big move was 4 on the floor, you know. But it was a 3-speed, and I drove it for 100,000 miles and sold it for just about what I'd paid for it back when I bought it. New, just because trucks were accelerating at that time, and then much later they became fashionable, and then they started doing all these things to them. And think about that; they're no longer just the practical utilitarian vehicle that one buys to haul things. They're now a statement, just like a car or any of the rest of that kind of thing. And they certainly, you know, it was a beautiful vehicle to drive. It was a beautiful vehicle to drive. You set up high, of course. I mean, it's a great vision looking out. The hood just slopes away very rapidly. It was a gorgeous vehicle. And, of course, you're right. It had all the bells and whistles, the heated seats and heated steering wheel and lane keep assist and, you know, automatic braking for, you know, when you're in cruise control and, you know, the cameras. That was another thing, neat thing. I haven't figured this one out yet, but I took someone in the vehicle, and I was back, put it in reverse to back up, and then they got out. And when you put it in reverse, of course, the camera comes on to show what's around. And I could see the person getting out of the car and walking away. And I'm like, where's the camera that shows this kind of thing? But you got
in the mirror, in the bottom of the mirror.
Okay, because there was like the whole. There's the two scenarios. You see the truck itself in like a box, and then what all is around it, and then next to it is like a 3D that shows the bushes and the people and all that kind of thing. And I thought, gosh, look how amazing! And it's you know, I learned to drive with my mirrors, and I still drive that way. But
they had those on horses?
No, I just turned around in the saddle, cowboy. But these have so many things to help you that really, and it's so big, that you're a little bit lost if you're not actually looking at what's going on around the truck. You can actually miss some things. And that's probably because of the crew cab and the factory up high and the long bed and all those kinds of things. But this was I don't know. I thought it was a marvelous It was not like driving a truck like you think. And most of the big ones are like that. But it's just, they're so comfortable and so smooth, and they ride so quietly, and there's so much room now in the back seat, the big seats, and, you know, it's quiet. It's got the noise canceling, so you can talk to people in the back, and they can talk to you, and it's just, you know, it's pretty amazing stuff what they do with these trucks now.
Yeah, they've come a long way with trucks since the F1, well, it was the F100 originally, but it came out into the F150 series, and you know, they've come a long way. I mean, Ford F-series trucks have been the best-selling trucks for over 30 years, and there's a reason for it, you know, and nothing against the competitors at all. I own all three. I own all the big three. I have Ford, Chevy, Dodge, but you know, it's got, something has to be said about the fact that when you see a municipality or a state crew or a big fleet for a business, most of the time they're running Fords.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, but it's the truth. And there's a reason for that. You know, they are a really, really good, heavy, you know, long-lasting truck. Now, when the F-Series trucks, well, when Ford went to the aluminum bodies on their trucks, that was huge because for years, at least up here, you know, whenever you looked at a used vehicle, you'd say, well, does it have any rust? Oh, it just got the typical rust, and that means that the bottom corner of the front fenders or over the fenders in the rear, you know. You knew where the rust points were on different vehicles, you know, like Chevy had their own spots that were trouble spots, and Ford had their own spots that were trouble spots, and everybody's cab corners were falling out. Well, they went to the aluminum aircraft, military-grade aluminum bodies. You don't have that anymore. You don't have to worry.
Right.
The only thing that's a downside is that it's a lot. You get into a fender bender, it's kind of a different story. You know, you're going to have to wait for parts. You're going to have to... Because they can't bump out bump it out.
Yeah,
they can't bump it up like they used to.
No beating it out, putting a little Bondo on it and repainting it now. You replace the whole thing. So, yeah.
Yep. Right. So you got to replace the whole thing to make it nice, to make sure your insurance is paid up. But other than that, I mean, the fact that you can run your truck and then, you know, as long as you treat the frame and your running gear okay, which is something you should do anyway, at least in the northern country where we use a lot of salt, and it's going to last you. I mean, you might have a 10-year truck again, you know. There was an old, I think it was a Merle Haggard song that said, I wish trucks would last 10 years like they should. You know, it kind of brings home today with some of the vehicles made, but they don't last you 10 years anymore.
Yeah, talking about that built-in obsolescence kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Which I hate. But anyway, this truck had a 3.5 liter V6 EcoBoost high output, and it had plenty. It had the towing package. You might be able to. You certainly could speak better than I could about its towing capability with a V6 in it. It seemed like a very solid, heavy vehicle. Didn't feel like the motor was being pulled at all in just what I was doing. But I don't know about hauling with this vehicle.
Well, they have a pretty good tow rating overall, you know, between 5 and 8,000 pounds. That, you know, so that's
pretty
good.
Small boat or a little trailer?
Oh, no, that's, I mean, trailer. Remember, 8,000 pounds, that's with the bigger engine, I believe. But 8,000 pounds is 4 tons. So that's a decent amount of weight to haul with a half-ton truck. You know, not that long ago, that's what you could haul with a three-quarter-ton truck. So, you know, it used to be like, you know, three-quarter-tons would be 8,000 pounds, and then your 1 tons would be 10,000 pound, you know, 11, 13, but now the 1 tons are rated for 13,000, and you know the towing capacities are going up, and that's kind of a race amongst all the big guys building trucks is how much it can tow at, you know, what size of truck, because a lot of people, they have a camper they want to haul, okay, but they don't want to buy a 3/4-ton truck because they don't need one, but they don't mind the idea of having a half ton because a half ton rides a lot smoother than a 3/4 or 1 ton.
Right.
And so now you got a much more improved towing rating with these half ton trucks, and you have a better payload capacity with these trucks than you used to have. So you can do more with the truck that fits your lifestyle, which is nice. It gives you a lot more flexibility.
I have a question about towing, because there's a towing package on this thing, and we're talking about the engine size and the capacity and 8,000 pounds. What is the – when is it a requirement that the what is being towed has braking capacity on it? At some point, I think –
no, yeah, over a certain amount of well, that has to do not with the truck as much as what you're hauling. So, like, when you have a regular single axle, you know, 8x10 Tractor Supply special, it doesn't need brakes because it's not rated to handle any more weight than, you know, say 1,000 pounds or something like that.
Right.
So you put a dual axle 7,000-pound GVW trailer on it, and they know you're going to put like a small B series tractor or something like that on it. You have to be able, you know, the rolling momentum of that trailer behind your truck, you know, especially if the road conditions are slippery, will push the back end of that truck right out and make you crash. Then you're getting into a whole other ball game of, okay, the trailer has to have brakes. The truck has to have a 7-pin RV plug, which a lot of trucks are coming with nowadays. So you have your gain, what's called your gain, in your vehicle. And that electric braking system, you adjust. So you're rolling with an empty trailer. You hit your little switch. You can feel the take up on the brakes. And you just want it, you know, this is just, I guess, a little bit more information than necessary, but you want it to be able to feel the brakes a little bit, and then you're good. When you load it, you know, with your tractor or what have you, then as you're rolling, you check your brakes again because you want the trailer to do some of that braking so that when you're driving, you're only using your truck brakes and the trailer's using its brakes.
Right.
So that's part of that.
Yeah. Well, of course, this one, back to all the bells and whistles kinds of things, daytime running lights, it gets mileage-wise, it says it has an average of 19 miles to the gallon.
Fantastic.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it's got had a step tailgate on it.
Yep. That's a handy thing. Have you tried that out yet?
No. When? Think about who you're talking to.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, hang on, that was a stupid question. But I will say I've used that step tailgate, and, you know, my whole life I've had to do the step on the tire and throw the leg over the bed rail thing.
Yeah.
And and to have that little thing where you just pop it out, it folds down, you flip up the I don't know what they call a banister rod, and you just climb, you just step into the bed like you're climbing upstairs. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing that and again, it's one of those things that it's great, but make sure you know where you're going when you back up with the tailgate down, because that's not an apparatus that you want to back into a beam somewhere.
No, that would not be good.
Right.
Well, you know, everything, all these great new innovations on trucks, I mean, GM came out with a tailgate that actually folds into a cascading staircase.
Right.
Okay, that's fantastic. But, you know, you got to think that these are great things for convenience. But I think that it maybe some people don't think about this because they think about how great it is, as opposed to, okay, well, you need to make sure cleaned out and spick and span all the time. Because, you know, and the same thing with the step sides. You know, if you get up here, you know, you're driving around all these slushy roads and stuff, you're going to get ice jammed up inside that thing and debris. And you're going to set it up to fail if you don't keep that unit clean, and you got to protect your investment. So is it a really mm-hmm. cool convenience? It certainly is. Is it something that might break? Yeah. You know, I mean, if you look around here, you probably, for every 10 trucks you're going to see, you will see one out of those 10 that have a dented tailgate because they backed up into something without, you know, because they weren't looking well enough. You know, it's just,
yeah.
You're driving up over snowbanks and stuff.
You're a young fella, and I'm sure you probably remember this. I remember it very well, but as you got into the bigger trucks years ago, the tailgates were all heavy. You remember you opened the tailgate, bam, it's
yep.
Then you had to really pick it up to get it shut kind of a thing. And
well,
all of the,
that's how
you
get
people
attention
that,
at the grain store.
Well, and the people now who are buying these trucks, and you open the truck and it basically lets itself down at a slow
yep.
speed, and then you go
yep.
to shut it and you start picking it up and it actually assists and helps you close the tailgate.
Yep.
You can feel all that.
That's
kind of
pretty,
those are
laugh,
pretty cool features.
I laugh. Well, yeah, but also on the key fob, you can I don't remember if it was the Ford or the Chevy, but you can press the button and it'll actually open the tailgate for you.
Oh yeah, that's on the Ford. The Ford will do that too.
Yeah, that's right. I laughed very hard. I mean, it wasn't because it wasn't a cool feature. I mean, it really is a cool feature, you know, because a lot of the grain stores that you go to, there's a guy standing there on the loading dock. He's ready to throw the feed in the bed for you.
Yeah.
So you can back up, throw the tailgate down, and Bob's your uncle. You load it, he'll close it, and you leave. But at the same time, you know, the thought crossed my mind, like, how lazy are we getting? I mean, really. Oh,
well,
I got to get out of my truck and open my tailgate again.
Well, here's the problem with that. You back up, you open it, the guy throws all the stuff in, you close it, you drive home. You have to unload it at that point in time.
Yeah.
I tore my knees up. I tore a knee up once in sports, and so I really couldn't get around very well. But I could get in my vehicle, which was an automatic, and it was actually a pickup truck, but an automatic. And so I drove. I had to get dog food. So it's just what you're describing. I back up, get out. I'm on a crutch. I'm on crutches. Get in. I need dog food. So, oh, here, we'll load that for you. Oh, thank you so much. And they go out and they load the dog food, and I drive home. Well, now what? Because it's still in the back of my truck. I'm still on crutches, and now I'm supposed to get it out of the truck and down to where it's supposed to be at the dog kennels. It's like, this was
uh-huh.
not the smartest idea I'd come up with in quite a while. So, but you do.
Well,
you figure out what to do.
Yeah, it's easy. You drop the tailgate, and then you back up to the kennels and then accelerate quickly.
Well, I couldn't. They were actually down the hill, so my methodology was to drag it out of the back of the truck, carry it about, you know, two feet, or throw it about 2 feet, hobble up there on the crutches, pick it up again, throw it a couple of feet. I eventually got there. I mean, it's just mind over matter. So.
And you lived to tell the tale.
I did.
Yep.
I did. Made it through.
Yep.
I know
a couple of people up here that have somewhat recently bought the new F-150, I think theirs was a platinum, but I hear nothing but excellent reviews from people that have purchased
sure
them. They love how they drive. And these people aren't just the kind of people that, you know, obviously with the price tag, it's not going to be a local who lives in a trailer, but they drive around here, then they drive in the city, and they, you know, and they still have nothing but good things to say about it. I mean, like any vehicle, once you do get used to where your blind spots are and how the vehicle functions in tight
mm-hmm.
corners and stuff, you can maneuver it just about anywhere. But, I mean, they've come a long way. Ford did it. I think, personally, that Ford did a tremendous job with the new F-150.
Oh, I agree with you. One of the things, talking about getting used to it, knowing your blind spots and all those kinds of things, and, of course, we only have a vehicle for a week, and I drove this one much more than Lori did. But, you know, you would drive it to places. I mean, I live in Pinehurst. Where do you go? We go to the grocery store. But you drive it to places like the grocery store, and you're parking in the parking lot with lots of other vehicles. Now, it was no problem, handled really well, great turning, all that kind of thing. But when you pull into the parking space, and of course it's the typical problem, you're either going to be a foot over the line or the back end's going to stick out a foot behind the line. It's one or the other. But when you pull in and there's a car across from you who's also parked, as you approach it, I didn't have it long enough or do this enough to really understand the distance between the front of the car and the car that I'm approaching. And so, and again, it's got that slope away look to it. So you really, I really had trouble gauging the distance. And so I would think I would be really close to the car in front of me. So I would, you know, put it in park and get out. And I would find I would be 3 or 4 feet from the car in front of me. It's just,
you got to get used to it.
Well, it's that optical illusion too, because you're up higher. And so I just think things appear closer to you than they actually are when you're up that high sort of looking. And this one had the 20-inch rims and, you know, the big tires. And that kind of, it was wonderful.
Has anybody noticed I haven't said a word for 25 minutes?
I have. I was getting scared.
I was backing in there.
25 minutes?
Listen, you didn't say any last week, and Hezzy and I got through it incredibly well,
I thought.
It was amazing.
I wasn't here until I walked in the door the last 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say
and
hello to Hezzy and all our listeners.
Well, I missed you chiming in because you always give me food for, you know, to make comments.
Else you would have said, Lori, where are you? Are you breathing? But I'm going to take the last couple of minutes to say something.
Thank heavens
Yeah. First of all, the Ford F-Series, although it wasn't called the F-Series, but that truck has been manufactured without a lapse since 1948, so it's not 15 years
old. That's when I was born.
It's more like 70 years, because that is the year you were born. And also, since 1977, it has been Ford's number one best-selling pickup truck. I mean, this is an incredible, this is a piece of America. I mean, this is a legacy, you know, vehicle for.
That's your phone, dear.
I'm turning it off. This is a legacy. This is a legacy vehicle for Ford. The other thing is that I wanted to chime in about the ride. This was a truck that didn't feel like a truck. This said. When lest we forget, we owned a very early model Ford 150 years ago, and this doesn't even light a candle.
That was my brother's truck.
Well, no, I had one. Remember?
No, that was an F-250.
Mine was not a 250, was it?
The green one, yeah, that was a 250. Glad you noticed. No, my brother had a 1989 either 89 or 90, F-150, camper special, full on the floor, granny low. And I remember that he was the one who had a license. So one summer, you wanted to get rid of a couch from the living room and have it brought to the dump. So we had the grand idea of putting it in the bed of the truck. And where I didn't have a driver's license, and neither did my friend Aaron, we decided that we would drink Moxie and eat beef jerky, sit on the couch, and drive from fishing hole to fishing hole with my brother driving in the bed of the truck going down the highway, which was fantastic.
Were you actually fishing out of the back of the truck?
No, because we couldn't catch anything. We just decided to wait till we got to the water.
Well, we've had Fords for a long time. It is with us too. I mean, and this vehicle, the thing I did want to say is this. I enjoyed driving this truck. It drove like a car. It was smooth.
Yeah,
it was
really
quiet.
Good.
It was easy to manage, easy to handle. The only drawback is don't plan on pulling into your local grocery store, you know, parking lot easily. It's a big, wide, tall vehicle.
Not until you get used to driving it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Wynn. Not until you get the knack to drive. But it is. It's a big vehicle.
Why don't they have parking spots allocated just for trucks?
Because people would park in them because they'd be bigger.
Okay. I don't think it would make any difference. I mean, I guarantee if you had reasonably sized parking spots so that everybody with a truck or an SUV could pull into them, you'd pull into the to the area, and you'd see that, you know, one side had like economy parking and one side had truck parking. You'd see somebody with like a Volkswagen Bug sitting in that big parking spot.
Sure, absolutely. That's what I'm saying.
You know, and it would just blow your mind, and it would cause controversy. So, you know, they have RV parking spots in some places like Walmart and so forth. And if you're, you know, I don't think that a crew cab short bed is a very long truck, to be honest, in my school thought. But, I mean, if you have a crew cab 8-foot bed, that's kind of like a school bus. You got to make a 3-point turn to get into your parking spot. But, you know, so that's when you park it on the
outside.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, my.
But
you have to send
not only did I hardly speak, but neither did
Hezzy. Which car are you doing next week?
Johnny?
Say that again?
What are we doing next week? What are we getting today, Ann?
Today we're getting the new Mustang, I think.
We're going to talk about a Mustang.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, wow, Mustang.
But we also, Johnny, we kind of haven't discussed this. We have two wonderful cars at the house.
The Mustang. I think that would be cool.
Yes, it would.
And it goes along
with
the Ford note.
It would be cool.
Yeah.
But
well, continuation.
Well, let's plan on the Mustang then. That'll be exciting because Johnny loves that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can do 35 miles an hour in it all around Pinehurst. Wow.
But we've been very fortunate. We've had some wonderful, wonderful cars lately, all of which we'll get around to. But we'll plan on the Mustang for next week.
Okay.
And on that happy note.
This is fantastic.
See what happens? You know, what happens is if I don't keep talking throughout the show, then I kind of lose my focus. I don't build up to the big crescendo.
Oh boy.
Was that it? Did we miss it again?
I think we missed it. And on that happy note, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, Hezzy, you
next
have a great
week.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next week, but Johnny will probably do most of the talking because of the car we're going to be talking about.
All right. Send over the exact model.
As soon as it pulls in the drive. All right, have a great week, Hezzy.
Bye
now.
Everyone.
Bye.
See you, Wynn and Lori and John. Thank you so much. What a pleasure. Well, I can't believe it. Well, you know, it is very, very interesting, actually, talking about the Ford 150, just really exciting. And it's such a superlative vehicle. And it has a legacy that goes back, as Lori said, since 1948. That's longer than I've lived. My goodness, like 2 years only. But whatever the case is, they were ahead of me. So that's really very exciting. And it is also quite exciting what Ford has done with the Mustang. They have literally rejuvenated it and brought it up to such a high standard again. And they're doing some exceptionally good work at Ford, which I find very, very exciting, very compelling. And so that's nice. Well, we have a moment. Let's take a quick break, find out what's going on in our neck of the woods. Let's find out what they're doing at the Cabot Creamery, and we'll be back.
Hey, you a judge?
Sorta. I report on cheese. I don't judge.
Well, I heard on the radio Cabot Cheddar always wins awards for taste.
Well, let me see my notes. Best taste? Check. Best texture? Check. The farm families in Cabot, Vermont have won every major award in the cheese world.
Every award?
Every.
What about the U.S. Cheese Championships?
Cabot's won that many times.
How about the American Cheese Society Contest?
Cabot won it.
World Cheese Championship Award?
Best in class on cheddar.
Fiery Food Challenge.
Cabot.
International Fancy Food Show.
Cabot Rules.
The Stanley Cup.
That's hockey.
Oh.
Look, Cabot's won awards for best sharp, best light, best butter, and best cheddar.
Yeah, but a certain big cheese company's TV ad show, they won an award from judges wearing bright yellow lab coats.
Oh, those are actors.
Not real judges?
Real judges wear white lab coats.
They do.
Look, Cabot is best because they own the company, ship the milk, make the cheese. They won so many times, the real judges even asked one of Cabot's cheesemakers to be a judge.
I don't believe you.
Here, taste.
Hey, I can taste why Cabot's won every award.
You be the judge.
And I get to wear a yellow lab coat.
White lab coat. Check.
The best tasting cheddar on the planet is...
Time and time again.
Cabot Cheddar.
Check.
Welcome back. Well, there's a lot of exciting stuff. Normally we would hope to speak to the mayor from Mount Vernon, but he isn't on the line yet. So what we'll do is we'll tell you what's going on in Mount Vernon. Evidently, there's a mayoral candidate by the name of Shawin Patterson Howard, and she's issued press release that came from her campaign. And she says, the healing begins now, which I'll read this to you because it's really quite compelling. So she says she's calling on mayoral candidates to sign a pledge to run a clean and civil campaign. So yesterday she called on her opponents in the crowded field of Mount Vernon Mayor to run their campaigns based on proven records and ideas for the future of our city, she says. And further, she calls on them to avoid the viciousness and social media attacks so common in today's campaigns. She says, we face grave problems in Mount Vernon. It's time to get serious. On her campaign, she says, we intend to change the culture of the game. We'll have the honest conversation with a clear-eyed focus on what we can become, on what Mount Vernon can achieve. There is no time for drama or theater. Let's get moving in the right direction, she writes. In a video posted on the Facebook, on her Facebook page, which garnered thousands of views in just a few hours, Mrs. Howard pledged to run a campaign based on three guiding principles. One is be 100% honest and focus on on honest and truthful conversations. Be transparent on her campaign's finances, and be civil and professional in all her campaign's communication and operations. Citing an untruthful and malicious robocall that went out anonymously, and the day after a heated and troubling unprofessional press conference attended by the mayor and president of the city council, Mrs. Howard called on all campaigns to come to the table to sign a pledge. She says, for the past 12 years, our mayoral races have deeply fractured our community. Mrs. Howard said, we cannot wait until the campaign season is over. To begin healing, we must start today. We must set the tone for our conduct as a campaign and along the way, make responsibility for the actions of our supporters and take responsibility for the actions of our supporters. And Mrs. Howard invited her opponents in the race to meet at a neutral location to sign a pledge to run campaigns based on honesty and civility. She says, I will call each of my opponents to invite them to meet. I look forward to it, and I look forward to an honest and civil electoral contest. The healing begins now, she says. Very, very compelling. So then what I wanted you to know, if you hadn't already seen it, we had posted this. Bear with me a moment because I've got to find this on the website, on the Yonkers Tribune website. We had pointed out that there was a poll taken with regard to the campaigns that are being launched. So we gave an out-of-the-gate polling result for Mount Vernon Mayor, and we revealed it back on the 2nd of March. So the pollster's name, he's a veteran Democratic pollster. His name is Tom Kiley. He's based out of Boston. He took the poll. And on the list was 23% came out for Andre Wallace, who is the present Mount Vernon City Council member. Then we had 21% for the incumbent Mayor Richard Thomas. Shawin Patterson Howard, who I just read her letter to you, she's at 15%. She's the present CEO of the YMCA of Yonkers. Then there's Clyde Isley, who is the former Mount Vernon Police Commissioner. He had 13%. He's also the endorsed Democratic designee for mayor of Mount Vernon. Then we have Delia M. Farquharson. She's at 4%. She's an incumbent Mount Vernon City Council member just elected last year, and she's running for mayor. Then we had the former mayor himself, Ernie Davis, with only 3%. And the undecided vote is at 21%. What's interesting is we weren't permitted to give further information on the poll, but it turns out the poll was tabulated based on a polling of 932 people, and the results are either plus or minus 3. 3%. So very, very compelling vote, you know, poll at that. So speaking to, you know, openness, we've always been known for that anyway, but so that's the truth. So we had someone had commented on the website where that article was posted, the polling results, and they wanted to know how many people were polled and so on and so forth. And we weren't permitted at that time to reveal it. We just got the information this morning about the number of people that took part and participated in the poll and the results. So we're going to write about that hopefully by the end of the day. And I didn't expect it, but I have some important meetings I have to attend today, which were just totally unexpected, but it's got to be done, as they say. Now, let's just see what else is happening on some other issues, which hopefully you'll find interesting. Bear with me a moment here. I'm going to move over to the, you know, where I have it posted. And 1 second. So this is probably a very important case that's come up. Evidently, Huawei is suing the U.S. government over a ban on its products. It seems that Huawei today said it was suing the United States for barring government agencies from buying the Chinese telecom giant's products following warnings that they could serve as a tool for Chinese intelligence services. Huawei said that the suit was filed in a U.S. district court in Plano, Texas, challenging a 2019 U.S. defense bill that prevents U.S. government agencies from buying the company's equipment and services, as well as working with third parties that are Huawei customers. The U.S. Congress has repeatedly failed to produce any evidence to support its restrictions on Huawei products. We are compelled to take this legal action as a proper and last resort, Huawei's rotating chairman Guo Ping said in a statement. If this law is set aside, as it should, Huawei can bring more advanced technologies to the United States and help it build the best 5G networks. Guo said that the company was seeking unspecified damages for what he called unconstitutional, quote-unquote, restrictions. Now, the U.S. government thus far is sparing no effort to smear the company, he said at a news conference at the company's headquarters in the southern city of Shenzhen. Guo even countered that the United States government, quote, has hacked our servers and stolen our emails and source code, end quote, without providing details. The United States says that Huawei equipment and its communist government to spy on other countries and disrupt critical communications. Washington is urging governments to shun the company just as the world readies for the advent of the fast, ultra-fast 5G telecommunications, an advancement that Huawei was expected to lead and which will allow wide adoption of next-generation technologies like artificial intelligence. Huawei has responded with an aggressive public relations campaign to counter the U.S. warnings, with reclusive founder Ren Zhengfei denying the claim in a series of foreign media interviews. The charm offensive went into another gear on Wednesday as Huawei welcomed news organizations on a tightly guarded tour of its massive production line and research and development facilities in southern Guangdong province. Huawei's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, Ren's daughter, faces potential extradition from Canada to the United States over charges of Iran sanctions violations. Now, the U.S. Justice Department accuses Huawei and Meng of circumventing U.S. sanctions against Iran. Two affiliates also have been charged with stealing trade secrets from telecommunications group T-Mobile. Now, Meng faces a May 8 hearing in Vancouver, where she was arrested while changing planes. Two Canadians have been detained in China. in suspected retaliation over her arrest. Huawei is the world leader in telecom communications networking equipment, but its dominance has increasingly caused concern in Washington, which fears that Beijing could use security backdoors to gain access to networks for spying or other purposes. These concerns have been fueled by Ren's background. He is a former Chinese Army engineer and a law recently enacted by Beijing that obliges Chinese companies to aid the government on issues affecting national security is uppermost in Americans' concern over the issue. So that's just one of those things that are happening. Okay, well, I'm just looking back at our studio screen, and so we don't have anyone there. So I guess that's cool, and this way we don't have to be concerned that we're not getting the mayor, because I can't prepare these analyses and news reports and still look at the studio at the same time. It just haven't figured out a way to do that. So we're going to just move on. Bear with me a moment here. I want to go on and see just what else we can touch on before we go. We will have a truncated program today. We're going to close at 11 because what ended up happening is that I've got to have some meetings that I didn't expect. And so those are very important. All right, so bear with me a moment here. We're moving on to some other issues. And one second. This is really quite interesting as well. Venezuela has expelled the German ambassador for interference in internal affairs. It seems that Venezuela expelled Germany's ambassador yesterday, hitting out at international support for opposition leader Juan Guaido as the United States stepped up sanctions in a bid to force out his rival, President Nicolas Maduro. Separately, an American journalist was detained by Venezuelan security services for some 12 hours and later deported in an incident condemned by advocacy groups as an attack on free speech. The foreign ministry gave German envoy Daniel Krina 48 hours to leave for interference, quote unquote, in Venezuela's internal affairs. He had greeted Guaido at Caracas Airport on his return to the country on Monday. Guaido said Krina's expulsion will be seen, quote, as a threat to the free world, end quote. Krina was among more than a dozen foreign representatives to welcome the National Assembly leader, recognized as interim president by more than 50 countries, but so far the only one deemed persona non grata. Krina had helped to bring humanitarian aid to the country, Guaido said in a speech to opposition lawmakers, adding, quote, it seems that the Maduro regime does not forgive anyone who wants to help Venezuela. Well, German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas said that kicking Krina out only, quote, aggravates the situation, end quote. Caracas is, quote, sending a message to the international community that such frontal support would have consequences, but it also carries a risk, end quote, said the Venezuelan analyst Mariano de Alba. Meanwhile, journalist Cody Weddle, who worked in Venezuela for several years as a correspondent for a variety of U.S. media, quote, has been released after being detained by Venezuelan authorities, end quote. Miami's WPLG Local 10 News reported and did so on Twitter. According to Venezuela's National Union of Press Workers, he was picked up at 8 in the morning. His work equipment was confiscated, and he was held for over 12 hours before finally being released and sent to Simon Bolivar International Airport to be deported. They do this for one reason alone, to intimidate journalists from reporting on @JGuaido and on conditions in #Venezuela, tweeted U.S. Senator Marco Rubio. Now, Washington continued to tighten the screws on its campaign of sanctions to force Maduro from power, revoking the visas of 77 people linked to the regime, including officials and their families. We will continue to hold all of the Maduro regime accountable until democracy and libertad, which means liberty, are fully restored, U.S. President Mike Pence said in a speech. The move brings to more than 250 the number of Venezuelans targeted by U.S. visa bans, a State Department official had advised Agence France-Presse. So this is one of the major tragedies that is going on and continues in Venezuela. And I just want to quickly see if anything else has transpired, particularly in the Middle East, as we come toward the end. I don't know if we had covered this. I don't know if we did cover this actually yesterday. The British foreign minister says that the Yemen peace process could be dead within weeks. So British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt said on Sunday that a peace process in Yemen's main port city could be dead within weeks without more committed effort from both sides. So that has become a major, major concern for sure. And let's just look and see what else is happening on the world stage. This is really quite important. Evidently, a showdown is taking place. Brexit and trade tensions leave European economic growth grinding to a near halt. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says a disorderly or no-deal Brexit would substantially raise costs for European economies. For more on these type of issues continuing, and that becomes a problem. The Irish economy is among those set to be worst hit by Brexit, particularly if the UK leaves without a deal. But Dublin has, at the same time, been attracting increased investment since the vote, with many financial firms choosing to open offices or expand their operations there. Also, after the Brexit referendum in 2016, there were warnings that tens of thousands of financial industry jobs could be lost in London. And with now weeks to go until the UK is set to leave, it seems that the final number of jobs affected will be much lower than expected. So these are just very, very intriguing situations that are taking place. Let's quickly go over to see what else is happening in Asia. This you might find very, very interesting. The Thai court has dissolved the Shinawatra-linked party over their botched princess bid. It seems that a key party linked to Thailand's powerful Shinawatra clan was dissolved on Thursday by a court just weeks before a general election over its ill-starred bid to front a princess as a candidate for premier. Thai Raksachart, which is tied to ex-premiers Thaksin and Yingluck Shinawatra, promised Princess Ubolratana as its prime ministerial candidate if its bloc emerged with a lower house majority over the March 24 election. It was an unprecedented move in a constitutional monarchy where royals are officially above the political fray, and prompted a rare public rebuke by her younger brother, King Maha Vajiralongkorn, who issued a royal command declaring the party's move inappropriate, quote unquote. Thai Raksachart was found guilty of committing an act, quote, hostile to the constitutional monarchy, end quote, by the 9-member constitutional court, who unanimously voted to dissolve the party. So party executives, including 2 Shinawatra family members, were also banned from politics for a decade. The monarchy is above politics, and to maintain political neutrality, the king, the queen, and princesses can never exercise political rights by casting votes, Judge Naharin Mektairat said at the end of an extensive ruling. Dissolution is a hammer blow to the prospects of the powerful Shinawatra clan winning a parliamentary majority in March 24 elections. Thai Raksachart was established to back up the Shinawatra's main political vehicle, Fu Tai, which won 2011 elections with a landslide. Its downfall is a major fillip for their army allied rivals, who are fielding current junta leader Prayut Chan-o-cha as their candidate for premier. Tai Rachsachart was set to compete in 174 constituencies with 108 candidates vying for seats through the party list, a system to allocate extra parliamentary seats according to the proportion of votes they scoop up. Grim-faced party executives, all dressed in black suits and led by party leader Prechapol Pongpanish, filed out of the constitutional court through the ranks of media. Well, so that's the story there. Very, very compelling as well, to say the least. Let me just quickly see if, you know, I wanted to go one other place. Bear with me a second here. I want to just quickly check and see what else is happening in Europe. Evidently, a verdict is due in the trial of the Frenchman accused of the Brussels Jewish Museum attack. And this will be the last thing I'll read to you about. Evidently, Denmark has a pervasive rape culture, quote unquote, despite a reputation for gender equality, says Amnesty International. So even though Denmark rates highly for gender equality in many areas of life, the Scandinavian country has, quote, a pervasive rape culture, and there is endemic impunity for rapists, end quote, according to a new report by Amnesty International. Denmark's international reputation is as a progressive land of contented citizens. It came second only to Sweden in the 2017 Gender Equality Index, which examines a range of policy areas such as work, money, and health. It has even won accolades both for happiness and as one of the world's greatest countries for women. But Amnesty International's worrying report paints a dramatically different picture when it comes to sexual violence. Despite Denmark's image as a land of gender equality, the reality for women is starkly different, with shockingly high levels of impunity for sexual violence, said Amnesty International Secretary General Kumi Naidu. Now, the problem begins with the radically different estimates for the number of women raped in Denmark every year. Official figures from the Danish Ministry of Justice state that around 5,100 women are subjected to rape or attempted rape every year. However, according to the Amnesty International report, researchers at the University of Southern Denmark said it could be as high as 24,000 in 2017, and in that year itself, only 890 rapes were reported to authorities, 535 of which led to prosecutions. Only 94 ended in convictions. Amnesty says that the differences are because rape in Denmark is often not reported, and cases that do go through the justice system rarely result in convictions. This is in large part a result of the process for reporting rape, during which victims are often, quote, met with dismissive attitudes, victim blaming, and prejudice influenced by gender stereotypes and rape myths, end quote, the report had said. Quote, the simple truth is that sex without consent is rape, said Naidu. Quote, failure to recognize this in law leaves women exposed to sexual violence and fuels a dangerous culture of victim blaming and impunity reinforced by myths and stereotypes which pervade Danish society from playground to locker room, police station to witness stand. Well, Amnesty recommends that the government focus on amending the definition of rape and train police officers and lawyers so that they do not accidentally re-victimize women during the reporting process. Survivors told Amnesty International that the fear of not being believed or even being blamed and shamed by police and justice officials were among the primary reasons for not reporting rape. Given Denmark's international reputation for equality, how has this rape culture persisted and become so severe? Quote, I believe that the perception that Denmark has achieved gender equality obscures the picture not only for the authorities, but also for the general population. discussions about issues such as persistent rape culture are often dismissed for this reason. There is little recognition of the scale and root causes of the problem, said Anna Blues, a Western European and women's rights researcher with Amnesty, in an interview she had with Franz Van Kat. Now, this picture of widespread sexual violence and impunity for perpetrators stands in stark contrast with the image of Denmark as a country where gender equality has been achieved. And as our report shows, rape victims, survivors report rape myths and gender stereotypes at different stages of the legal process, and many do not report to the police stream they would be met with prejudice and victim blaming. Christine, a 39-year-old journalist, said that she tried four times to file a report of rape with the police. On her second attempt, she was taken to a police cell and warned that she could go to prison if she was lying. She described how the reporting process meant enduring new fear, shame, and humiliation, and told Amnesty International, quote, "If it was a 20-year-old, I wouldn't have proceeded after the first attempt." She said, "I wouldn't have been." So another woman told Amnesty how intimidated she felt going to the police. "I was just one 21-year-old woman sitting there with two guys looking at me saying, 'Are you sure you want to report this?'" End quote. "I was just a young girl claiming to have been raped." Blues said this is starting to change now as women's rights organizations have been raising their issue and activism led by rape survivors is strong and growing. Currently, the Danish criminal court defines rape on the basis of physical violence or threat thereof. The presence of duress, the victim's inability to resist the act, and victims interviewed by Amnesty International stressed how important it was to them that the definition of rape in Danish law is changed to a consent-based one. Only 8 out of 31 European countries analyzed by Amnesty have consent-based legislation in place, said Naidu. "By amending its antiquated laws and ending the insidious culture of victim blaming and negative stereotyping, Denmark has an opportunity to join the tide of change that is sweeping Europe." So the laws focus on resistance and violence rather than on consent has an impact not only on the reporting of rape, but also on social awareness of sexual violence, both of which are key aspects of overcoming impunity for these crimes and preventing them from happening. Hanne Baden-Nielsen from the Center of Victims of Sexual Assault at Rigshospitalet, the hospital in Copenhagen, said, "Now a man can say she did not say no, but the question should be whether she said yes. There must be a mindset change." Okay, so that is where we're heading. And that's going to be very, very intriguing how we go there. Well, I see that it's 11 o'clock. Bear with me a moment. We're going to say have a good day. We're going to be back with you tomorrow. And we'll have things to talk about then. Bear with me one moment, though. No, I guess there's not much more to share at this moment. I don't have time to get into that subject, but news is breaking out in the Middle East. So we'll have to see what that is. We'll be able to tell you about that tomorrow. So just thanks very much for being with us today. Quickly, just look to see who's on the schedule tomorrow. We're going to speak to three very, very eloquent people. We're going to speak to Mayor Victoria Garrity from 10 to 10:30. We're going to speak to author Richard Cerulli from 10:30 to 11. And we're going to speak to Vincent Marone, the filmmaker director, from 11 to 11:30. And we'll have about a half hour to catch up with some international news before the weekend begins. I can't believe what happened to this week. It went by so quickly. I'm just blown away. So, and then hopefully as we approach the weekend, weather will start to warm up and we can move away from winter's wrath and enjoy the spring that Mother Nature will bring forward. So let's hope for the best. So let me go back to our studio screen and wish you a good day. All the best. Goodbye.